From Entrepreneur Media, this is Problem Solvers, a show in which entrepreneurs do what entrepreneurs do best, solve unexpected problems in their business.
We were completely wrong.
And I'm just like, it's not selling.
It was like, we have to start from scratch.
I'm Jason Pfeiffer, the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine. Hey, before we begin this episode, I want to tell you about an amazing event from our sponsor. Listen, do you want to learn how to go from good to great to unstoppable? Friday, September 28th through Sunday the 30th, invest in yourself and buy a ticket for Relentless MV, a one-of-a-kind exclusive event at Lambert's Cove Inn on Martha's Vineyard, where world-class motivators will help you gain the mental edge to push yourself to the next level and maximize your potential. World-renowned trainer Tim Grover, retired Navy SEAL David Goggins, tech entrepreneur and fear guru Patrick Sweeney, and an elite lineup of performance experts will share how they've gained the mental edge that's taken them to the next level. They also have a very special guest, Red Sox great and Hall of Fame pitcher Pedro Martinez. It's a great event to learn, become inspired, and to network with the other A-player attendees. Both weekend and day passes are available, and as a listener of this podcast, you get a special deal. Use the promo code SOLVERS to receive $500 off. Visit RelentlessMV, Relentless, the letters M and V.com for more information. By now, there are limited tickets available. All right, on with the show. In 2002, Malcolm Gladwell wrote a piece for The New Yorker called The Talent Myth. It remains a must-read for entrepreneurs because it gets you to think totally differently about people management, which, of course, is one of the hardest parts of being in business. So the basic summary goes like this. Businesses have bought into this idea that they're hunting for talented employees, and when they find talent, they should promote talent. But Gladwell makes the very meticulous argument that this is wrong. Quote, "What if smart people are overrated?" End quote. That's what he writes. What if, in fact, the thing businesses think of as talent doesn't actually correspond to performance, and businesses are really hiring and promoting the wrong people and therefore harming themselves in the process? Malcolm Gladwell, if you don't know, is the best-selling author of books such as The Tipping Point and Blink, and he has a really fantastic podcast called Revisionist History from Panoply. And this talent myth concept is classic Gladwell. Look at something people take for granted and come to understand it in a different way. Find a problem where nobody was even looking for a problem. And given that I'm someone who's very interested in how people solve problems, I wanted to know from Malcolm, how does he approach the very notion of problem solving? Like, how does he find the things that other people overlook? So I asked him.
Well, you know, it helps that I'm a permanent outsider. So, you know, to make the link with entrepreneurs, it's no surprise that the people who tend to come up with the most kind of innovative breakthroughs in a given field are people who approach the fields from the outside, who have, you know, only one foot in it, and so who bring a whole new sort of fresh perspective.
And in the spirit of doing things differently and embracing a new perspective, today on Problem Solvers, we're going to mix up the format. Usually, as you know, each episode of this show really zeroes in on an entrepreneur solving one specific unexpected problem in their business. But today, I want to take you into the thought process of a guy like Malcolm who writes about problem solving. We talked about the value of being an outsider, the importance of taking time to solve problems, why Malcolm refuses to think of himself as a brand, and more. It was a really valuable conversation for entrepreneurs with a lot of lessons, and I want you to hear it. And we're going to explore it all, and you know this is coming, right after the break. Payroll and benefits are hard, especially for small businesses. I mean, who has the time to be an expert in things like taxes and regulations? Nobody running a small business, that's who. And old-school payroll providers just aren't built for the way you work today. But Gusto is. It's making payroll, benefits, and HR easy for small business. In fact, 9 out of 10 users say Gusto is easier to use than other payroll solutions, and 4 out of 5 customers actually reduce payroll errors after switching to Gusto. If you want to see what people are saying, Gusto says to just Google the company. That's how confident they are that you'll see people singing their praises. You don't get that with most payroll providers. Most small businesses don't have an HR expert, but you don't need one to use Gusto. With great software and great service, you can focus on your business, not payroll and paperwork. To help support this show, Gusto is offering you, our listeners, an exclusive limited-time deal. Sign up today and get 3 free months once you run your first payroll. Just go to gusto.com/problem solvers. That's gusto, gusto.com/problem solvers. And now our second sponsor. If you've ever sent an email to customers, then you know this is not as simple as like sending an email. It's not sending an email. You need the right email marketing platform, one that's actually designed with your type of organization in mind. That's what Emma is. It puts its customers first, offering powerful email marketing with a personal touch. With Emma, you'll have everything you need to connect your data, build your audience, and do your most successful marketing ever. And how do they do it? With their easy-to-use platform, which makes advanced functionality accessible to everyone on your team, no technical skills required. You can even connect Emma with the services you count on to run your business, like Salesforce and Google Analytics. Not to mention, Emma's award-winning team is always ready to support you on your email marketing strategy, design, list migration, and more. So, put the power of email experts behind your marketing. Request a customized demo of Emma's email marketing platform today at myemma.com. Again, that's myemma.com. All right, we're back. So, a couple of notes here before we dive into the conversation. First, Malcolm and I actually spoke for a story that we published in the September 2018 issue of Entrepreneur Magazine. So, as you'll hear, he's on a cell phone and outside because we weren't originally thinking about capturing audio, but what he said was so good that afterwards I asked if I could run parts of it on the podcast, and he said sure. And so I'm going to break my conversation with Malcolm into 3 different chapters with 3 distinct lessons. Chapter 1, the benefits of inexperience. Chapter 2, the importance of execution. Chapter 3, what it means to be a free thinker. And chapter 1, the benefits of inexperience, really picks up from what Malcolm was saying a minute ago about how being a permanent outsider helps him solve problems. I mean, by that, he means that he's a journalist. He's basically parachuting into situations, but he's not of them. Just like, as he says, many entrepreneurs aren't of the industries that they come to dominate or redefine. They're outsiders who bring a fresh perspective.
And the other thing that gets theorized in innovation, too, is just how much of it is generational. You know, it's very often change happens when the original generation is no longer in a position of authority, and a new generation comes along with new ideas and changes things. That is a wonderful case study with the telephone, which was completely mismarketed because people who invent the telephone are from the telegraph industry, and they don't understand what they have. They understand the technology, but not its place in society. And for 30 years, the telephone kind of languishes until all those guys are gone, and a new that comes in who have no memory of telegraph and so are sort of unencumbered by that set of assumptions. Well, that's sort of the great virtue of being a journalist, is that particularly a journalist who keeps moving, as I try to do, is that I'm almost always in that position of being a little bit of an outsider and knowing a little but not enough. And that is a hindrance sometimes, but a lot of times it's an incredible help in sort of looking at things with fresh eyes.
It reminds me of something I often tell young entrepreneurs, which is that their inexperience is an asset. When they walk into an industry and they don't have the answers that everybody older than them has, that enables them to do things that the other people can't.
Yes. No, I think there's absolutely just so. I mean, I think it's important to understand that there are a set of trade-offs of pros and cons associated with experience and a set associated with inexperience. And, you know, that you need to have both groups around if you want to pick something that works. But it's wrong for anyone on either end of the continuum to dismiss the value of the other.
That last part right there is so critical and yet so overlooked, and I'll admit I'm as guilty as anyone of overlooking it. We often celebrate the outsider, the person without experience, and we root for them to make big, sweeping changes because Big changes are exciting. They reveal to us the infinite possibilities of the world. But of course, as we've covered on this show before, you can't be a revolutionary all the time. If you're baking cakes, you can make the most revolutionary cakes in the world, cakes that nobody else had ever thought to make, but you better have someone on your team who knows how to source raw ingredients like milk and eggs and sugar, or else you're just going to be standing in an empty bakery making no cakes at all. So, on to chapter two, the importance of execution. Here we build off our last subject about revolutionaries. What happens when you're a revolutionary but someone else is leading the same revolution? Because this actually has been a problem for inventors and entrepreneurs throughout time. Malcolm wrote a New Yorker piece about this years ago. It was called In the Air, which challenges the notion that we have the single brilliant inventor who makes radical breakthroughs. History often forgets this, but that's not really true. Thomas Edison didn't invent the light bulb. There were many people developing light bulbs at the same time, and his just happened to be the most commercially viable. Alexander Graham Bell wasn't the only one developing a telephone in the late 1800s, and in fact, another inventor filed a telephone patent on the same day as him. I wanted to know from Malcolm, what is an entrepreneur supposed to do with this insight? What are we to do with the realization that if we have a great idea, we're surely not the only ones to have it?
Well, you do two things with it. One is it ought to, I hate to use this word again, but it ought to be a kind of reminder of, a gentle reminder about the importance of humility, that you shouldn't pretend that you are the sole person in the universe to have happened upon an idea. And you should also understand that ideas come as much from the world outside of you as from your own thinking. That's the first lesson. It says, that's why that article is called In the Air. That articles aren't in your, or ideas aren't in your head. They're in the air. And what you've done is you stumbled across them and added to them, but you haven't necessarily created them out of whole cloth. And the second thing it does is it ought to remind you about the importance of execution, that maybe the value added is not in the conception of something, but in, I can't believe I'm telling you this. This is something old hat, but you know, that maybe ideas are cheap, but the ability to execute is what, at a premium. And, you know, just because lots and lots and lots of people conceive simultaneously of search, doesn't mean the guys at Google aren't geniuses. They are, but it's what they did with that idea that was in the air that's so important.
Right. Yes. When Malcolm said that, I was reminded of an email I got from this young aspiring entrepreneur who listed off like 10 ideas of his and asked me which ones I thought were most promising. And I wrote him back and said, it's not just about the idea, it's about the execution. Which of these ideas can you execute the best? And then to remind myself of this, because even I need reminding of this, I wrote it down on a post-it note and stuck it on my office wall, which is where it remains today. It's not about the idea, it's about the execution. And as I said to Malcolm, the lessons he reminds me of now is that history's greatest thinkers weren't just great thinkers. They were great executors, because if they hadn't executed properly, we'd have forgotten that they ever had an idea in the first place.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it's so much. I mean, as a writer, I'm constantly aware of that fact. I mean, so many of the things that I write about have been written about a million times before, but, you know, the value I bring to it is in how I represent those ideas, in the context I put them in, et cetera, et cetera. So it's I don't feel like that's a lesser accomplishment. I feel like it's actually a pretty honorable and important thing.
And I agree, says the guy who's making a podcast based on what other people tell him. Okay, chapter three, how to be a free thinker. When you think of Malcolm Gladwell, you have a very particular idea in your head about the kinds of things he writes about, the stories he tells, the perspective he has. And I'd wondered, how consciously did he create that perception? Like, at what point did he go from just writing whatever came to his head to thinking, this is a Malcolm Gladwell story, and therefore it has to fit the brand called Malcolm Gladwell? I thought he'd have a very strategic answer to this, but he surprised me with his answer, because although he's very conscious about how he approaches his work, he just doesn't think the way someone with a quote-unquote personal brand thinks.
I don't really think in that way, because I don't really, I've never used the word brand to describe what I do. And I think it's very, I think it's really dangerous if you're someone who's doing something creative to start to define what you do, even if it's a correct definition. It's limiting to have that thing in your head of what you're, of what you think you do. And it starts to constrain you. And so I sort of rebel against that and I'd like to pretend at least that, that the things I do can be, you know, as different as anything under the sun. Now, it's obviously not true, but it's just really useful, more useful to think that way than to have a sense in my head of what I stand for. I also contradict myself a lot. I mean, I'm constantly changing my mind about stuff. So it strikes me as being like, really, how can I represent something as well defined as a brand if I'm constantly changing my mind about what I believe and the way I write and all kinds of things?
Is that to say that you have not thought to do something and then said, that's not... Like my audience wouldn't expect that, wouldn't know what to do with that from me.
No, I mean, I think of my audience as being pretty similar to, I don't think it's a good idea to work backwards from your audience. I think we should give them more credit than that, that people who read or listen to you because they like you, not because you resemble them. Or because they want their own particular tastes represented on the page or in a podcast. They're curious. They would like to experience, and sometimes they like you precisely because you're so different from the way they are. So it's sort of a dead end to start reverse engineering your work from the taste of your audience. It's my problem with a lot of, you know, I've long been a foe of market research because I just don't think people in market research understand this, or they understand it. They don't properly weight this distinction between, you know, when you ought to give someone exactly what that person wants, or when what that person wants is something they can't articulate. You're in the position of presenting them with a gift or a surprise. And I'm in the gift and surprise business. I'm not McDonald's making your hamburger to order.
You're describing you're describing what people always lauded Steve Jobs for, that he was always showing people something new that he knew they wanted, rather than starting with what they wanted and then giving it to them. But that is the considerably harder trick to pull.
Yeah. Although, no, I wonder about this. I think that if you're Hollywood and you want to make movies, in some ways, the purest and easiest way to make movies is to find people who you like and give them the means to make whatever they like and kind of worry about it later. Now, is that strategy a better strategy economically in the long term? Maybe. I mean, those occasions when Hollywood did that in the early 70s are among the most productive and lucrative eras in Hollywood history. And the eras where they don't do that, like right now, are the eras where everyone's worrying about the future of the movie. So, I don't know. Or maybe it's a wash. I mean, I don't know. It certainly strikes me as a lot easier to run Paramount Pictures in 1972 than it is to run Warner Brothers in 2018.
Yeah.
Where everything you do has to be understood and calibrated and precisely predicted.
How, if you like to, and I completely understand the thinking you don't want to define yourself in a way that then kind of shuts out other opportunities. How do you define what you do? Do you have a kind of core outside of just whatever, you know, things that excite and interest you? Is there a kind of core filter or something that when you look at something you say this is right for me to do?
Yeah. No, you know, it's funny, since starting the podcast, it's changed a lot of my thinking about what I do, because I ventured into a world I never thought I would venture into. And now, I'm doing something that's much more collaborative than I normally do, you know, with its production and editors and sound engineers, and where the mode in which I'm reaching people is very different, where I'm relying on my voice and not my pen, where there's all sorts of, and I would never... You know, I only did this because my best friend runs a podcast company, and on a lark, he said, why don't you try one? And I thought, why not? I thought it was going to take me like a month, and I would never go back to it. So it's like, once you realize just how much serendipity there is in a field like mine, then I think you have to sort of abandon any kind of rules like that. You know, I tried to write a screenplay at one point. It didn't work, but it was really fun. I don't regret doing it. You know, I'm open to suggestion if somebody wants me to try something. I mean, I did that masterclass thing. It's like, yeah, super fun. I mean, I never thought I'd do that. I never thought I could have enough to say about that. Turns out, maybe I did. I don't know. People seem to think so. So it's like, I think to go back to something I was saying earlier, the most important thing is never to make a decision about yourself that limits your options. And self-conceptions are powerfully limiting. In the act of defining yourself, you start to close off opportunities for change. And that strikes me as being a very foolish thing to do if you're not 85 years old.
Self-conceptions are powerfully limiting. That is another one. In fact, just after he said it, I wrote it and I put it on a post-it note and I stuck it on my wall. Because that ultimately is the key to problem solving. How do you face a challenge? By thinking of yourself not as one particular thing, but as an ever-changing thing, a thing ready to mold itself into a solution, a thing that isn't limited by its own vision. We solve problems by, in essence, being problem solvers. And that's our episode. But wait, before you go, please hear me out on a few ways you can stay in touch with the show and contact me directly. First of all, if you like the show, it would be amazing if you subscribe to it on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Problem Solvers. That way, you'll never miss an episode. We come out every Monday morning. Also, I love hearing from listeners. You can go to jasonpfeiffer.com. That's J-A-S-O-N, F as in Frank, E-I, F as in Frank, E-R.com, where you'll find my email address, social media handles, and also you can sign up for my monthly newsletter, The Pfeiffer 5, which is 5 monthly insights and bursts of inspiration for entrepreneurs. It's basically a collection of the ideas that excited me the most that month. So please go check it out. And that's again, jasonpfeiffer.com. And if you want to drop me a line directly, please let me know about the problems you've solved, and I might have you read the letter in a future episode of the show. We can all learn from each other, and that also means you. Problem Solvers is a production of Entrepreneur Media, and this episode was edited by Conrad Martin. We are also online at entrepreneur.com. Again, I'm Jason Pfeiffer. Thanks for listening, and now go solve some problems.